You're listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set up to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 421. I'm your host, Andreas Pinter, and joining me for the show is my co-host, Pontus Böckmann. See ya!
Hey, son, Andreas. Finally a new week. Finally a new episode of the ESP. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Mm-hmm. I've had a very nice Easter weekend with my potential in-laws.
Good.
Yeah, traveling across half the country, but that was a lot of fun. But that means that we are already in April, which is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that in this springy weather, almost resembling to summer.
Ooh, really?
You haven't been skiing much lately.
Well, not since I was skiing the last time, but we still only have like 4 or 5, 6 degrees Celsius. So today it rained all day, so it's pretty miserable, I should say. I'm not seeing spring or summer coming anytime soon.
No. Okay. We have, over the weekend, we saw 26 degrees Celsius.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. In April. Not even April. It was still March.
Wow.
So, yeah. There's absolutely no evidence that the world is warming up. So, anyhow. Yeah, we forgot something. We forgot to say hello to everyone.
Hello, hello.
So we're probably going to be doing
start
that
over?
Until Annika comes back.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. I'd like to start with something that I did on the last episode. Apparently, I boo-booed.
Boo.
While I was talking about this year being the year when lots of elections are happening all across the world, and especially in Europe, I identified this year as 2014 instead of 2024.
Yeah, that's how old we are, people. That's how old we are. We don't know even what decade we're in.
Yeah, 10 years have passed and we still don't recognize the year. And you know what hit me about that? I only missed by 1 year the time when we started doing this podcast. We've been doing this podcast for 9 years almost, and a half years.
Almost since 2014. That's what you were thinking.
Exactly. Almost as long ago. And I really love doing this, and I appreciate your friendship, your all the work you're doing in that. And I really appreciate our listeners tuning in every week. And we love you, people. And thanks very much for bearing with us.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that some of you have been with us for all that 8.5 years.
Crazy people. I don't know what they're thinking.
Let's insult our listeners. That will help.
Right. Speaking of this year, Andreas, it's not just elections coming up. We have a couple of great events coming up as well. Of course, first we have the European Skeptics Congress in Lyon, 30th of May to 2nd of June. And I've just heard that the early bird period has been extended. So you can still catch the lower prize.
The early worm.
The early worm, yes, that's right. And the early prize. If you register before 1st of May, so the last day to use the rebate is 30th of April. So that you should really do that. And we see registrations are coming in now, so it's really, really good. And also, don't forget, if you belong to a skeptical organization, you can get an even more bigger rebate. It really doesn't matter which organization. We trust everybody, to be honest. So if you're part of the Swiss Skeptics or some French organization or whatever it is, you are entitled to another rebate. So do that. But there is another event also coming up. We're still already looking forward to the next one. And we heard, I think it was today, that QED announced that tickets are going on sale on May 7th. And we can't wait for that either. That'll be really cool to go there to Manchester. We always do that. There's an early bird period there as well. I don't know the dates in my head, so sign up early for that. But if really you want to go to the gala dinner, you do need to click as hell on that registration button on May 7th, because those tickets will normally disappear within an hour.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to the gala dinner, but it's a lot of fun. And even if you don't go to the actual dinner, everybody who has a ticket are welcome to the entertainment that happens after the gala dinner. So there's a lot of options for you. Looking forward to QED as well.
Yeah. So this is not only... So 2024...
Oh, yeah, you got it right.
2024 is not only a year of elections all over the place to keep an eye out for, but also a year where two major skeptical events are happening. So, yeah, we really hope to meet every one of our listeners in either or probably both of those events. That would be great.
I'm sure all of our listeners will come to both events. That will be two big events.
Yeah, too big. That would be too big. But the more of our listeners we meet there, the happier we are.
Of course.
Yes. But instead of talking about stuff that are there to look out for, we have a show to deliver. And as usual, we start that show with Trish, also known as This Week in Skeptical History. Yes. Many of our listeners will know that I do work as a tour guide, and occasionally I go to Italy and try to educate the people about history, about events, about things to see. But since I'm a skeptic, I love talking about science and sciencey stuff. And wherever I can, I try to debunk stuff as well. One of those topics that I often cover when we are around the Rome area is a tragical event that happened 15 years ago. It will be 15 years this weekend. That is the 6th of April 2009 terrible natural disaster known as the L'Aquila earthquake. So L'Aquila is a place in the region of Abruzzo in the middle part of Italy, and it's in the middle of the Apennine Mountains. That is a seismically very, very active area. And on the 6th of April 2009, in the middle of the night, a major earthquake of 6.3 on the Mohmann magnitude scale hit the area, and specifically the town of L'Aquila, because the epicenter of that earthquake was under the town. Well, it's not a town, it's basically a city and a commune, which is the capital of Abruzzo. And the town has about 70,000 inhabitants. And out of those number of people, tragically, more than 309 people died as a result of that earthquake. Now, why is it of concern for skeptics, that event? I don't know if you remember that, Pontus. What happened then?
Was this when the seismologists were accused of not
Yes.
predicting this?
Well, it's let me clarify that somewhat. So what happened was... 6 days prior to the actual earthquake, there was a meeting of a special committee. It was called the National Commission for the Forecast and Prevention of Major Risks. They held a meeting because there had been previously a very long series of small shocks, like very small earthquakes, but some of them were not only registered on seismographs, but also by the people, so fell by the people. So the people became concerned. So after the meeting of that commission, there was a press release and an interview on national television that basically reassured people that there is nothing serious to be expected. So they should not be fearful. This is quite normal for the area. So this is just what's happening now. And then 6 days later, on the 6th of April, the earthquake hits, medieval buildings collapse, and lots of people lose their lives. So as a result, these people were taken to court. And the trial went on for 3 years, and eventually on the 22nd of October 2012, a 6-year jail sentence was given to six of these people, or actually seven of these people. Five of them were scientists of different areas that are of concern for people dealing with earthquakes and natural disasters and public service, and two were civil servants, basically, and one of them was of the Civil Protection Agency's Earthquake Risk Office. And the other one was the former vice president of Civil Protection Agency's technical department. So they were taken to court and sentenced to 6 years in jail for manslaughter. Well, involuntary manslaughter. But it still resulted in a big outcry, not by the general public, but the science community all over the world. Especially there was a Nature editorial that was published after that the verdict was announced. They called the verdict, and I quote, perverse and the sentence ludicrous. And some of them went as far as saying that this was an attack not on these people, but science in general. So science was on trial. And some people took the opportunity to try and explain how earthquakes could not be predicted and how there is no forecasting when and how big an earthquake will be when it hits. And during the proceedings, the legal people denied that it was an attack on science. But one of these people who went by the name Bernardo de Bernardinis, he was the one who was the former vice president of Civil Protection Agency's technical department. He did say that there is nothing to fear. And another one, Bosky, called a major earthquake very unlikely. So that reassured people that there is nothing to fear from. And they went back living their lives. And during the night when the earthquake was happening, because of that, and that was one of the things that came up during the trial, that people felt reassured that it would not become more serious. So they stayed inside their houses instead of going outside onto the streets and get to a safe place. The other thing that was brought up was how badly designed some of the buildings had been. Yeah, you can expect medieval buildings to collapse when that happens, but some of the more modern buildings collapsed as well, which can only be a result of poor design and the lack of caution when it comes to building something on a seismically active area. Right?
Yeah.
This has been brought up when the earthquake hit Turkey as well, where, if you remember that, lots of buildings were just badly constructed. Mm. And there was one person from LA who said that in LA, this would never happen because those buildings have been designed to withstand large earthquakes. The problem that these convicted scientists tried to explain was that you have to understand risks. And when it comes to risk management, you have to understand the uncertainties of science. The main topic as a result of this has basically become the fact that science communication had a failure here. So it was more of a failure of science communication than the actual science, because the science was there. The science was available. It showed that it could have been the foreshocks of a major earthquake. And sometimes a long series of foreshocks is what you expect when a major earthquake is about to hit. But it could also be that when these smaller shocks happen in a long series, they can basically release the kind of tension in the ground. And as a result, it could be that the major earthquake itself can be avoided. So there was no consensus among these scientists. This was the other problem, that people expected a clear answer. Do we have to be afraid that something is going to hit us and take our lives? And these people went for the easy answer that it's very unlikely, which is probably a big science communication error, because you have to be able to communicate the risks and the uncertainties, but it didn't happen. And as a result, more than 300 people died.
Yeah, but to be fair, it's very hard to understand these things.
Exactly.
People are not good, and nobody is good at that. You have to train to understand the terms of huge numbers, risks versus hazard, things like that. That doesn't come natural to people. So you have to start in school, really, to teach people to understand science. But it's hard.
Yeah, but eventually the message ran across and it looked like there is a major relief for these people, because six of the seven people involved were basically acquitted of their charges. So the verdict was overturned, but it happened 2 years after the original verdict.
Yeah.
So that was a major hurdle for everyone. Six scientists basically avoided 6 years imprisonment, but one of them did not get acquitted, but didn't go to prison either, but was given a large fine. And that is the ex-government official who was responsible for the major communications of that issue and the result of the report of the committee.
Mm.
That's why he got a little bit of harsher treatment in the end. But yes, that generated a worldwide debate over the uncertainties of science and how we have to be able to communicate that better. So this is why I thought this is a major milestone in the history of skepticism as well as the history of science. So the 6th of April 2009, when the ground shook in the city of L'Aquila, and so did the trust in science for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that this week we don't necessarily have, well, news per se, but lots of interesting topics to cover from around Europe.
There's some news aspects of it as well.
So. Yeah, there is some, but not strictly the news that we are going to cover in the segment that we usually call the news. And I know we've talked about that earlier as well, but I'd like to mention here someone who's been of interest for skeptics for a long, long time, and that is King Charles III of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Well, now he's in the focus of interest for lots of skeptics, because, and all his subjects as well, is because a couple of months ago he announced that cancer is what he's currently fighting. And obviously, many, many rumors have since started gaining ground. One of those rumors is that he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was given 2 years to live. It's very interesting to look through what the reports say. It was done by a media outlet that is called In Touch Weekly. And they just outright said that sources exclusively revealed to them, sources close to the king, that he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was given 2 years to live. Now, there are a couple of problems with that statement. First of all, the sources remain anonymous. So that is a skeptical exercise to try to assess the validity of a claim like that. Because if they remain anonymous, then the credibility of that of theirs cannot be established.
Well, especially with the reputation of the press in the UK. They are known to sometimes just fabricate things.
Exactly. But that didn't stop Yahoo and some numerous other outlets from running that.
Then it must be
that,
true.
That story and picking it up. But it also started spreading on X, well, formerly Twitter.
Well, everything on X is true, isn't it?
Yeah, as we know. So we don't know. The other thing is that I'm no expert, but, well, pancreatic cancer is a serious thing. So if that is actually the case, then it could even be worse. So we don't know, and we don't know if the king will actually release any statements regarding that to clear that up. He might decide, well, they have a history of trying to wait and see what happens with something that people want to know about. It's better to wait for an official statement when it comes to this than starting to spread rumors. No matter how much we disagree with the old man, he's still a human being and we need to treat him with due respect and his illness as well.
Of course, we don't want anyone to die, even if we disagree with them.
Exactly. Unlike some people in political circles who
we do want to die.
Who would like to see their opponents dead just to get rid of them. Skeptics are usually not that kind of people.
No.
So we are not either. So we wish him well, and we wish him all the best and a successful fight against whatever kind of cancer he's currently suffering from.
Yeah. I have a bit of an issue with some of the language that we all use regarding cancer specifically. The first one is to say that we fight cancer. you can't really fight cancer. What you can do is you could do all the things that your doctor tell you and you hope, but it's not like you're fighting something, because that sort of implies that if you lose, quote unquote, then you didn't fight hard enough. And that's not true.
That's blaming the victim.
Yeah, that's blaming the victim, yeah. for not fighting, quote unquote, enough. The other thing is, I always wonder when doctors, you hear that the doctors gave him 2 years to live. That's not exactly the wording that a good doctor wouldn't use that wording. You make an estimate. Well, people in this condition may live between 1 or 3 years. You know, you could, it's not, I'm giving you 2 years to live and that's it. It's not like a sentence in a court.
Yeah, so like 2 years from today, you'll be dead.
Okay, I've start the clock and it's counting down on my website until I die.
You are quite right that many people do understand it that way.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely not the case. So yes, as you said, doctors usually talk about statistics when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Because you have to understand what you're facing. And yes, you're right about fighting cancer. If you want to do a strict analysis of that, it's probably more your doctors who are doing the treatment that are fighting your cancer.
Yeah.
And your own immune system.
The only thing you can do is to collaborate and listen to them and try to do what they're saying. But apart from that, it's because there's a lot of myth about willpower as well. If you just want to cling on, you can cling on for another 2 months. That's bullshit, really.
It is.
I don't believe in that at all.
It is, but it's always more difficult to do that and to think like that, think about that critically when you're the one in that situation.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get that talk with your doctor, you may not be, that's not the best position or the best situation where you can think logically and very calmly about things. It's very emotional. Of course it is very emotional.
And you try not to be the one who's against that kind of hope, even if you understand that there is no hope anymore.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be that person, the only one in the family. But sometimes, especially as a skeptic, you end up being the only one in the family who sees the situation as it is.
Mm.
And you struggle not to bring everyone else's mood down.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a difficult situation for everybody involved.
But to be a little bit more lighthearted about this, you know that saying that there are no atheists in a plane that is going down?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just for the sake of it, I'd like to test that hypothesis at some point.
Okay, that's a hard experiment to do.
I don't want to hit the ground at a very high speed with anything else but a normal landing. But I doubt that I'd become a bit of a believer.
I wouldn't think you would, and neither would I. I don't think so. It's too hard. It's too far away from who I am. I'm not prone to wishful thinking. No, I don't think so. We'll see. Well, we'll not see, probably, because
hopefully not.
You manage from that plane, Andras, you manage to send an email in the last moment. I'm still an atheist, and then boom, we'll see. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Anyway, terrible subjects here. Let's go to something a little bit more lighthearted, shall we?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I assume, Andras, that you've heard about the Havana syndrome.
Havana syndrome. I have, but I wouldn't be able to tell you what it is.
Okay. It's not about cigars. That's not a common misconception, but I'll just want to put that out of the way. It's not about cigars. But it is something that has been reported from many places in the world, but it started back in 2016 when the US embassy personnel in Havana, in Cuba, hence the name, they reported a number of strange and mysterious symptoms that they could only blame on some sort of attack. They were under attack, they felt, but there was no real tangible evidence of it, but they didn't feel well. And the US State Department eventually released a statement saying, quote, "Over the past several months, 21 US embassy employees have suffered a variety of injuries from attacks from an unknown nature. The affected individuals have exhibited a range of physical symptoms, including ear complaints, hearing loss, dizziness, headache, fatigue, cognitive issues and difficulty sleeping. Investigators have been unable to determine who is responsible or what is causing the attacks. End quote.
Very spooky.
Yeah, very spooky. And lots of speculations, of course, going around, especially in the papers. And most of them hypothesized that it was a new kind of sonic weapon, quote unquote. Other ideas included poisoning or perhaps some sort of microwave or electromagnetic radiation gun or something that was pointed towards the embassy. But there was no evidence of any attacks, not tangible anyway, except that the staff was complaining from these symptoms. And everybody agreed this cannot be natural. And it didn't take long from reports coming in from other places that had experienced the same thing. Beginning in late 2017, suspected attacks targeting US intelligence personnel were reported from a number of locations around the world, including Moscow, Tbilisi in Georgia, from Poland, Taiwan, and Australia. And then there were similar reports from Colombia, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Austria. And there were more than that. In early 2018, at least two US diplomats in China were evacuated because of they felt they were under attack. Later on in 2021, Vice President Kamala Harris had her visit to Hanoi in Vietnam delayed because of alleged attacks of the same sort. And the list goes on. There was in Washington, D.C., there was in Europe as well, Vienna, Berlin. It's happening all over the place. But what is really going on here? This week, on April Fool's Day, no less, but not as a joke, I'm sure, there was a media report presented, and there was this was of an investigation by The Insider, Der Spiegel, and CBS 60 Minutes. And they suggested that the mysterious syndrome has been linked now to Russian intelligence. They say that they have, quote, uncovered evidence suggesting that unexplained anomalous health incidents, also known as Havana syndrome, may have their origin in the use of directed energy weapons, wielded by members of Russian DRU unit 29155, end quote. So this unit has been blamed for several incidents abroad already, including attempted poisoning of the Russian defector Sergei Skripal in the UK in 2018. So this is not a good guy. So I'm sure it wouldn't be beyond them to attack embassies like this if they could. But we do have a problem. We have said this many times before, and a lot of skeptics have said it before us. Before you set out to explain something, you have to make sure that there is something to explain. Because there's not certain that there is a Havana syndrome at all. The thing is that there is no known mechanism that can explain these attacks. I don't mean that we don't know of a weapon yet that can create all of these symptoms in this way. The problem is that there is no plausible mechanism that fits all the reports. Mm. There is something that you could call sonic weapons. For instance, there's something that's called a long-range acoustic device or an LRAD, but they work because they are very, very loud. We're talking about 160 and 170 decibels.
Oh, no.
And so you couldn't do that without anybody hearing it. And these attacks are supposed to be silent. And we have Brian Dunning, of course, of Skeptoid fame, who has looked into this and made a very good analysis. And we will link to his episode about that. So, but maybe there was something else I mentioned. Maybe it was poisoning. But also there has been a lot of investigations done, especially on the Havana embassy, but also on the others, I think. And there were no traces of poison found. So then we have maybe it was some sort of microwave radiation or something like that. That's also been speculated. But we don't know of any kind of radiation that can cause these specific symptoms. So we remember we're talking about hearing loss, dizziness, headache, fatigue, cognitive issues, and difficulty sleeping. So there's a whole range of very different symptoms. Radiation can, of course, cause harm, but you burn yourself if you're exposed to too much radiation. And nobody got burned. That was not one of the symptoms that they reported. So I don't think this is a case of some kind of new James Bond villain weapon that somebody has invented with us knowing it. The problem is that there's no plausible physical explanation. We can't even think of such a weapon. Not because it's too advanced, but because of physics itself. Then there's another thing as well. These health issues only happened to the US personnel, and I believe one Canadian person, who were diplomats employed by the US. But it didn't affect the local personnel, like cleaners and others working in the same building. What kind of weapon can select only a certain nationality to work? If you imagine you have a cannon of some sort sending some secret radiation towards a building, how come only certain people get affected and not the locals? So very doubtful if there is a Havana syndrome, but then of course the question is, something did happen apparently. It's been all over the place. What is the explanation? There is one thing that can cause all of these symptoms: good old-fashioned stress. The Havana syndrome started in Havana, of course, hence the name, immediately after Trump had been elected president, and he vowed to crack down on U.S.-Cuban relations. That placed a real increased stress on the American diplomats there. And then it got a lot of attention, and it was established as a thing. And other people in similar situations suddenly had something to attach to their perceived symptoms, because maybe they were stressed as well, and now they had a name for it. And you can understand how this works as well. If everybody's stressed in an organization or in an office place like this, and one person suddenly starts to complain, and they're all under a lot of pressure, you've heard about the Havana syndrome, and then suddenly everybody starts to feel, well, maybe I feel strange as well. And then you bring up, well, I did have a headache yesterday, and then you get the ball rolling. So my conclusion, at least, of all this is that the most likely explanation for these events are not the Russian GRU, terrible as they may be, and they are. I think it's more likely that it is something that we call a mass psychogenic event. People who are under stress, and they are being more and more convinced that they're all the target of something very sinister. And it's very human, and there's no shame in feeling that way. And maybe they need help as well, and they should get help. It's not, I'm not trying to patronize anyone. I fully understand that. But maybe that is a more plausible explanation than some sort of super weapon that nobody can explain.
Yeah. It reminds me of how people try to link their experiences to UFO observations.
Very much like the when same you, thing. Yeah.
When you hear about people experiencing something similar, then it clicks that, oh yeah, that must be the thing that I have experienced as well. So yeah. Exactly how we, so it's a much more reliable.
Yeah, but there's a shame attached to being stressed as well. You want to do a good job. You knew when you signed up for this position that it was going to be a lot of stress, and you did convince your future boss that I can take it. I'm very resilient to stress. I will not. So you don't want to blame stress.
Yeah.
That's sort of not okay. So you are very happy in a way when another's explanation comes your way.
Yeah. All right. So let's stick to the psychological phenomena for a little longer.
Okay.
And we all know what wishful thinking is. Obviously, it is a way for us to not take something for what it is, but trying to project our wishes to what kind of outcome we will want from a situation. And it's being studied all over the place, but some of the studies have not provided conclusive results. So it could not be really deeply understood how it works, especially because these studies had been focusing on the positive outcomes. Like one example of wishful thinking is those of people going to a casino, doing some gambling. They tried to come up with the best ideas as to how to win the lottery, even though it is mathematically and statistically, it's just a play on the numbers.
Yeah, it's almost zero.
Yeah, it's
your, to win the big numbers.
Exactly. But a very interesting approach was applied by a team of scientists in a new study that was led by the University of Amsterdam. And they tried to assess how much wishful thinking is linked to the negative outcomes and the situations in which there is a large amount of uncertainty. And what you try to do is avoid a negative outcome. So they came up with a very smart research protocol. They tested this protocol with 1,700 participants. So 1,700 participants were involved. It was a set of experiments conducted in a lab and online as well. So there were things that could not be done online, but they combined the result of those different sections of the studies. They kept it very simple. They decided to use like geometric patterns, color patterns and stripes and different orientations of them. And you needed to recognize what the patterns were. Like there was an explanation and there was the pattern, and you had to match the explanations with the pattern. And sometimes it became difficult to identify them. But some patterns were linked with the negative outcome. That was a bit of an electric shock that people got as a result. And the online people, for them, the negative outcome was a loss of money. But there was another part of it. So there was a positive feedback as well. So they could actually gain some money as well. And that worked for both the online and the lab experiments. When it came to finding the right patterns and identifying the patterns, people looked much more confident and much more accurate in their assessments when the positive outcome or the neutral outcome was expected. So they were much more relaxed, they were much more laid back about them and capable of identifying the right patterns significantly more frequently than when they had to fear the negative outcome, just as the electric shock or the loss of money. The leading figures was Professor Joël van der Veele from the Faculty of Economics and Business and Professor Jan Engelmann. And they claim that this was the first major study with definite results. And it looks like when you are choosing the unpleasant outcome, you deviate from the actual facts and the correct answer as a result of wishful thinking. So you are willing to be wrong just to build up the hope that you can avoid the negative outcome.
I think that sounds very familiar to people I know, maybe myself as well.
Exactly. And they are speculating about the real world implications of that, how uncertainty and bad feelings can result in you not assessing a situation correctly, but wishing for a better outcome, even though objectively you should be able to realize that it's going to be the bad outcome. And we've mentioned disease that you suffer from, people not having themselves checked out by a doctor, thinking that, oh, it's all going to go away anyway, it's all going to be fine and all that. But they didn't stop at that. They actually tried a couple of techniques and methods to try and build up that realistic approach in people. So when they started making the patterns easier to recognize, it looked like it had a positive effect on the accuracy of the outcome. So like they were much better at identifying the right patterns. once they became easier to identify. But the other thing is when they had more time to collect evidence and the identifying parts of the pattern, that resulted in a better outcome as well. It translated as reduction of uncertainty that brought about that kind of developed sense of reality rather than wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. And of course, when the negative outcomes were replaced with positive outcomes, the wishful thinking that the participants showed started to diminish. So the more positive the outcomes became, the fewer incidents of wishful thinking happened. So I think that's brilliant.
Fascinating.
And it's a really interesting piece of research for skeptics, because we often come across that issue of wishful thinking when we try to convey the message of reality. Sometimes it's difficult, and this could be the reason why.
Yeah.
All right. But that were basically all the items that we have collected for this week. However, I believe we do have something to talk about, and that is who gets this week's prize for being really wrong.
Yes, so it is time once again for Pontus Pokes the Politicians. I'm renaming the segment. So it's not unexpected, but it shouldn't go unnoticed anyway. We have over the years handed out several really wrong awards to the Polish Piss Party, as I'd like to call them, also known as the Law and Justice Party.
Yeah.
At their time of power in Poland, they outlawed sex education and abortions, and also at one point they defended the deceased Pope John Paul II when it came out that he had protected Catholic sex abusers, but they think he was okay anyway. Thankfully, the PiS Party is now out of office. Hope they stay that way. And there is a coalition led by Donald Tusk, or Donald Tusk, who has taken over. But we should remember, and this is the story for this week, the president is still linked to the PiS Party. His name is Andrzej Duda, and he is still around to sabotage things until his term expires next year, mid-next year, I think. So I mentioned abortions, and the new government, led by Tusk, they are now doing their best to undo all the harm that the old regime has done and try to return things back to something sensible. So they adopted a new law to make the abortion pill prescription-free, since it is a very safe and sometimes necessary procedure that should be available, naturally. But Duda, as expected, made a doo-doo and put his veto in and stopped the new law. And some people say maybe that abortion rights is an ethical thing, not a scientific one, and maybe so. But if we are honest about it, the opposition is mostly based on religious nonsense. So if you're opposed to abortion rights, then most likely it is founded in religious things. And we don't like religion on this podcast anyway. Spreading misinformation about abortion is definitely a scientific thing, and a skeptical one as well. And that is what Duda did do. And I had to get that phrase in somehow, Duda did do. The reason that he gave for stopping this law is that it would make it legal for 15-year-olds to buy abortion pills. And he couldn't take that. He didn't like that at all, so he vetoed it. So, first of all, the legal age to have sex in Poland is 15. So if you do allow people to have sex, then you also need to give them access to all healthcare connected with that. That's one argument against Duda. Then he claimed also that the drug is, quote, dangerous for children, end quote. And that is not true. Scientifically not true. These pills have been around for a long time now, decades, and all research and experience show that they are very, very safe. And in any case, it's very clear that they are many times safer than going through a pregnancy, because that is not without its risks.
Yeah.
Further on, he said that such young women cannot be trusted in handling this well if you leave it to them. They may buy them and gulp down five at a time just in case, he said. Well, so Okay, so you're saying they're not old enough to be responsible for their own medication, but apparently they're responsible enough to take a baby to full term and handle them as becoming a mother. That doesn't
for fit. The rest of their lives. Yeah.
Yeah,
and bringing up a child.
Exactly. And also, these pills are not sold in buckets. They are sold one at a time, and they're pretty expensive. So the risk that a 15-year-old should buy boxes full of them and just down them like anything, that's very slim. The chances are very slim for that. So what is happening now is that since the government doesn't have the 3/5 majority in the parliament to overrule the presidential veto, instead, the pill will require to have a prescription until Duda's term of office is over next year. And hopefully they will get a new president who are a little bit more sensible. But until then, for doing a doo-doo, Duda gets this week's prize for being really wrong.
Hmm. And well deserved.
I hope this is the last time we have to give a really wrong to the PiS party or any of their followers in Poland. I hope we've seen the last of them. Maybe that is just wishful thinking.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. It will turn out, well, it might turn out to be right, but for now, it still could be just wishful thinking. All right. But it's not always that easy. I mean, things are not black or white.
Nope.
Which brings us to the quote that we usually finish the show on. And this quote comes from Oscar Wilde.
Woo-hoo.
And it's a quote from his play, The Importance of Being Earnest. And the quote itself is, the truth is rarely pure and never simple.
Hear, hear. He was a very smart man.
He was. he must have been a very interesting person to talk to.
Yeah. He's very quotable as well. He's one of these guys that every quote almost has been attributed to him at one point. But this is from his play, so it should be right.
Yeah. All right. So that brings us to the actual end of this episode. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Pontus.
Thanks a lot.
Many, many thanks to our listeners as well for tuning in. Please keep doing so. And until next week, goodbye.
Hejdå.
Mislat.
Tschüss. Tschüss.
This has been your ESP experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schwab and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at @espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook. I don't know how you can believe.
And one of them was of the Civil Protection Agency's Earthquake Risk Office.
Say that quickly a couple of times. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And most of them hypothesize. I know I can't say that. And you've heard about the Havana syndrome.